And our very special guest tonight, John Major Jenkins, will continue talking with him this hour about the Mayans. Maya Cosmogenesis 2012 is one of his works. Next hour, we'll open up the phone lines for you right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast with our guest, John Major Jenkins. John, our science advisor, Richard C. Hoagland, tells us that science believes that there is a black hole in the center of the galaxy. In looking at some of your works, did the Mayans also believe this?
Basically, yeah. The short answer is yes. It's really fascinating because the galactic center, of course, is a key thing for this whole end date alignment. And we also have creation texts that scholars have interpreted. And, you know, one of the things that I bring to the table is sort of a more progressive interpretation of what scholars are putting out there. There was a lot of that kind of thing in my book, Maya Cosmogenesis. In fact, I have an appendix that is called The Black Hole in Maya Creation Texts. Now, the way that this works is that in these texts, it's basically it says that creation happens at the black hole. It, you know, the glyph literally translates black hole, and that's pretty interesting because, you know, 2012 is really thought of as a type of birth or creation. That's why my book is called Maya Cosmogenesis. Like the rebirth of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And as you mentioned, the scientists are pretty sure now that there's a black hole, which is some kind of amazing transdimensional object where space and time breaks down and light can't even escape from it. And it's this magical singularity, you might say. And, you know, the galactic center, the Maya thought of the galactic center as a creation place, and the fact that there's a black hole in there, it just staggers the imagination to think that here it is, right here in the creation texts.
So, because, you know, John, I'm beginning to wonder. I mean, here we are, 2005, when most of the information about the possibility of a black hole started popping up. And this is with modern science, with our kinds of technology. Then we're talking about the Mayans from 2,000 years ago believing in this also. I mean, what are the possibilities that we were visited by extraterrestrials and they helped the Mayans, they talked to the Mayans, they showed them things of celestial wonders, and they then started putting this into their texts, their readings, and, you know, in their tablets and whatever form of communications they had?
Well, I suppose that's possible. That's one way to think about it. I also think that if the Maya were accessing a kind of extraterrestrial wisdom or a higher dimensional wisdom in the ways that we were talking about earlier, they could access realms of knowledge that we can barely appreciate today. You know, like the Mayan approach to gathering knowledge about the universe is very different from the scientific method, where it's all about data gathering and making graphs and extrapolating laws and forces from that. The Mayan approach was, as I mentioned earlier, it was more like shamanistic. It had to do with opening up the faculties of the mind to a direct perception of the universal truths. That's a really important point that you bring up there. And the whole information around it that I go into in the appendix to my book, it's, you know, there's a couple of different lines of evidence that feed into that too. So it just can't be a coincidence.
No, I mean, there's something there. What happened, John, to the Mayans? You know, as we were talking about last hour, there are some who have remained, and they've mixed into the Mexican society. But overall, what happened to the civilization?
I personally believe that it's not surprising. Civilizations go through cycles of greatness and decline. Again, this is just sort of the way of the universe. You know, there's periods of increase and there's periods of decrease. And you might sort of think of it as like the fall. You know, in our own, in the Western Judeo-Christian tradition, we have this idea of the fall of man or the fall of mankind out of the Garden of Eden. In other words, we somehow got disconnected from being in the paradise place, you know, being in the place where we were bathed in the light of God or the higher wisdom or whatever you want to call it. And, you know, these things, these processes, I think are really just part of the natural cycles of change. So the Maya, you know, generally speaking, there was a decline of the Mayan civilization. It's almost like, you know, the energy that animated the civilization just kind of ran its course. But then again, and I always like to emphasize this, you know, one of the things that led me to Guatemala was the fact that there were traditional Mayan people still doing their things up in the villages. And today there's more than 6 million pureblood Maya still living in Guatemala.
6 million?
Yeah, yeah. Different Mayan groups speaking different dialects. The Ichil people, the Quiche people are really interesting because they're the ones who preserved the Maya creation myth, the hero twin myth.
Okay, I was going to say, they are aware then of some of their past history.
Oh, yeah, yeah. A lot of the traditions have survived. The 260-day sacred calendar, for example, that's still followed, the same day count that was followed. It's been followed unbroken for about 2,500 years.
Are they particularly gifted? Are they particularly tuned into consciousness or whatever might be going on in the universe?
Well, yeah. You know, this is an interesting thing. I go back to some of my early travels to Maya land, and there's a kind of magic that you experience when you are in these villages, and it has to do with the kind of consciousness that is present there. There is almost a kind of very deep intuitive nature. It's almost like they can read minds or they can read your mind. And I know this might sound a little cliched or something like that, but when you're traveling around, and I did different things when I was traveling too, like I stayed in a village for a whole summer and helped rebuild a school, and I delivered relief supplies to a village in the highlands. So I really had a chance to hang out with the Maya. And the more time you spend, the more you realize that there's just a lot going on there that maybe you're not fully aware of to start out with, but the more time you spend there, you really, it's kind of a world of synchronicities, you might say.
John, do we know if there were other civilizations throughout this planet that also kind of focus in on 2012? I mean, could it have been, you know, the Egyptians?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, that's a fascinating thing because this whole galactic alignment thing, you know, to me, that was the key. And again, I also have an appendix in my book that goes into the history of that idea. It actually seems to have been pioneered in, you know, that there is this galactic alignment that happens, and ancient cultures thought that it was important. Mm-hmm. This idea seems to have emerged with that famous book, Hamlet's Mill, in 1969. That's where I trace it back to that. You know, one of the things that's fascinating to me is that other ancient cultures also seem to have been looking to the galactic center and alignments to the galactic center as being really key moments in the history of the Earth and the history of consciousness on this planet. The ancient Egyptians, the ancient Hindu systems of the Yugas. The Yugas are like the world ages, and the Yugas seem to be anchored to this galactic alignment period. And so, yeah, it's almost like this galactic gnosis in our own history of like the history of Western science and religion, this galactic gnosis is almost like an unrecognized layer. And that's what I tried to uncover in my follow-up book, which was called Galactic Alignment. Came out in 2002. I looked at all these different traditions around the globe, and sure enough, there was the, in the symbolism and the traditions, there it was, an awareness of the galactic center and how our periodic alignments to the galactic center transform humanity.
There's got to be some kind of major earth changes involved once this alignment occurs. Paul LaViolette believes there's some kind of cosmic wave that is on its way, doesn't know when it's going to hit. Is there the possibility that this galactic alignment between the planet and the center of the Milky Way might also wreak some kind of major earth changes on us, John?
Yeah, certainly. I like to think of it as the alignment is like an opening conduit. So more energy is coming in to the local system. And when more energy comes into a system, it can sort of break up or shake loose the rigid structures, you know.
Maybe earthquakes,
yeah,
things like that?
Yeah, and exactly. And but, see, it's a preparation so that the sort of earth changes that we're experiencing, it's actually preparing the earth to be able to hold and sustain greater energy, a greater vibration, you might say. And with that greater vibration, beings on this planet, human beings, I hope,
will
be vibrating at a greater level too.
There is a topic that always fascinates me, and that is that of time. Were the Mayans aware of this as well? Did they have their own views of time?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they are the time-obsessed culture par excellence. I mean, it's we hear this a lot. The amazing insight that the Maya have about time, I think, comes from their ability to transcend time. And this gets into the what we might call the metaphysics of 2012. It has to do with, you know, how everybody says 2012 is the end of time. Well, maybe. I don't believe that in a literal sense, but I believe that 2012 is a symbol for an ability that we have to end time, to transcend time. And when we do that, like the Maya did, they can look down on the historical flow and the historical processes that are unfolding on this planet and have a real insight into them as if from above. You know, they can see things as they unfold from above.
You know, I've always looked at it, John, as could it be the end of the beginning or the beginning of the end?
Yeah.
I think it's like you do. I think it's the beginning. I think it's the end of the beginning. I think it's a period of something new and enlightening. If there are earth changes, there are earth changes, but I do believe it's a new beginning for this planet.
Well, I think so too. And I think that, again, just drawing directly from the primary documents, the Maya creation myth, you know, the way that the world ages work, humanity always transforms itself into something new in order to survive the chaotic transformation.
Now, these alignments through the age, this is, how many ages have we been talking about here? Several of them?
Yeah, there's a total of five, and one age is like the age that ends in 2012. In the long count calendar, there's periods of baktuns. So each age, in the Mayan system anyway, each age is about 5,125 years.
How close does this echo Hopi prophecy?
Well, I think that, you know, there might be differences in some of the number systems, you know, preferential number systems, whether mm-hmm. they're using a 7 or a 13. Of course, numbers are very important, but there might be some sort of differences in the details. But I think that the Hopi were tuned into the same information.
Let's go back, if we can, to Zappa. that seems to be, as you said, the origin of the 2012 calendar. How many different cities or civilizations did the Mayans have during that period? Because they were spread out all over the place.
Well, sure, they had many different kingdoms, and there were great Mayan cities, like I mentioned earlier, Tikal, home to some 90,000 people. Copan was another great Mayan city. Palenque, another amazing place. And then up in the Yucatan Peninsula, you had Chichen Itza and Uxmal, many different places. Izapa itself is kind of the precursor culture to the Maya. You know, many thousands of years ago in Mexico, you had the Olmec people. The Olmec civilization goes back to like 1200 BC and earlier. And the Izapan civilization grew out of that and was very brief, but it was like the real transitional culture that pioneered some of the basic institutions that the Maya civilization later adopted.
Do you believe, John, that the Maya may be descendants from Atlantis? Is that possible?
Well, I suppose that's possible. That's one way to talk about it. Sure.
The work that you've done over the years, because you've devoted many, many years to this specific area, takes you all over the country. Conferences, speaking engagements. I've seen you on television before. I assume there's more. People, as we get close to this 2012 date, are beginning to become more interested, more obsessed with it, aren't they?
Yeah.
What's on your plate then?
Well, one thing I'm trying to do is to sort of facilitate, a real careful discussion around these things. And I'm interested in developments that are happening. And certainly as we get closer to 2012, there's going to be growing interest around it.
Yes.
Now, my whole perspective is that it's very important to reconstruct the original teachings and prophecy, because that is an element that doesn't seem to have survived among the Maya today, because you have to go back to this early site of Izapa and look at the carved monuments and how they're oriented to the stars and so on. And that's just the work of reconstructing this lost galactic paradigm.
Go ahead, John.
Well, another thing that is going on today is good, really interesting developments, is that a colleague of mine in England, Jeff Stray, he runs the Diagnosis 2012 website, and that has been a pavilion of all the ideas about 2012, the whole spectrum, everything from visions and fiction and all kinds of theories and research. And he just came out with a book called Beyond 2012. And that really is, I think, a step forward in the right direction to, I really hope that a conference can happen pretty soon, like with 2012 as the specific topic.
Oh, that would be something. Indeed. Is there anything startling that came out of your research over the years that even perplexed you, shocked you?
Well, the kinds of discoveries that, you know, like, for example, the black hole material, you know, that was pretty startling.
Yeah, it is.
Because one of the things that I do in my research is I do avail myself of pretty hardcore academic research, and I enjoy doing that. And in time, what happens is you start to synthesize a big picture of everything that's going on. And that's kind of, I think, the unique thing that I have to offer is the real picture starts to coagulate. And so I think that I'm able to put some things on the table that people haven't seen before, like including scholars. And, you know, I am an independent, self-taught scholar of these cosmological systems. And I guess that we have to just think about a lot of times the breakthroughs in a field of study come from outsiders.
Stay with us, John. We're going to take some fast blast questions for you next, because I've got a lot of them, and some of them are quite fascinating. The next hour, our final hour, will open up the phone lines right here on Coast to Coast AM. Don't forget, tomorrow and Saturday, parts one and two, Art Bell will have his annual predictions program, and then I'll be back live with you on January 1st, Sunday night, with a very special program with a number of psychics about things that will occur, they believe, in the not-too-distant future. And then I'll be in St. Louis for about a week before heading back to Los Angeles for some time. So I'll be leaving the cave. Hey, you don't want to miss the January issue, by the way, of the After Dark newsletter. It is the predictions issue, and it's tied into many of the things you hear here on Coast to Coast. All you have to do is call 1-888-727-5505 to order After Dark. And if you do or renew, you get a free CD on Perfect Possession, Art Bell's interview with Father Malachi Martin, 1-888-727-5505, or online at coasttocoastam.com. John, did the Mayans have any particular belief in creation, how it may have evolved here?
Well, yeah, they do. And basically, they believe that change and, you know, creation and evolution does not happen from below, like the way that, like in Darwinian evolution, mm-hmm. that there's sort of random chance mutations, and there's a buildup of processes, you know, and that sort of leads by happenstance to higher organisms and so on. The Mayan perspective is actually the opposite of that. They believe that all true change comes from above, or within, you might say. All true change begins first in the spiritual dimension, and then it sort of cascades down into the grosser planes of reality, and including the level of physical reality. And so spirit animates physical forms first and foremost, and all true change comes from above.
Fast blast question here from Stephen in Boulder, Colorado. He wants to know if we experienced drastic earth changes in the past cycles.
Well, yeah, that's some of the research that's being done. A lot of, like Paul LaViolette, for example, and, mm-hmm. and other researchers, they're looking at ice core samples, and there definitely seems to, the Earth is a tumultuous place, and there's been a lot of changes.
A writer from Cleveland, Ohio, wants to know if there's any tie-in with Lord Pakal, if he is involved in any of the 2012 prophecy from then.
Well, in a sense, Pakal was the great ruler of Palenque in the 7th century, and there's a famous sarcophagus lid from his tomb, and the carving on that is one of the clearest examples of how the galactic center was used by the Maya. There's a tree of life on the carving, and then there's basically you have this sacred cross tree. And in fact, in the sky, where the Milky Way crosses over the ecliptic, which is the zodiac or the path of the sun, moon, and planets, it makes a cross in the sky. And in fact, that cross targets the galactic center in Sagittarius. So Pakal is portrayed on that lid, making a journey, an after-death journey into union with the center of the sacred tree cross, which was the cosmic heart and source.
Would you ever like to have lived in this era, John?
Oh, yeah, you know, in a sense, at least in my own mind, I think of, you know, there. What I sort of tune into with Mayan culture is the sector of the society that were the stargazers and the poet-philosophers, the Tlamatinime, as they would say, the poet-philosophers who would discuss metaphysics and, you know, track the movements of the stars. So at least in that sector of society, I would have liked to have lived.
Mike from San Jose, California, wants to know if you have any more examples of the Mayans' knowledge of spiritual out-of-body travels, remote viewing, and what have you.
Well, let's see. I think that that is still being done a lot. Even today, the day keepers up in the highlands of Guatemala, they feel something called lightning in the blood. So this is sort of an inner intuition that they have. So like when they're doing a reading for a client, maybe they're trying to divine where a lost cow is or why a couple can't conceive or something like that. They'll count out the seeds and they'll have an intuition and a vision or a feeling. And that's one thing. I think a good answer to this question that would open up to a big thing would be that sacred plants that induce visions, shamans would use these things, and
Okay.
they seem to have been used by the people of Azapa. We see this on some of the carvings and the way that they're portrayed, and sacred mushroom stones, for example. These ritual mushroom stones are found all over the region. So clearly, the shamans of Azapa were doing some of this kind of visionary work.
A little ayahuasca, I guess, perhaps.
That's right.
Here is a interesting fast blast from Daniel Estate of Washington. Mel Gibson, he says, is working on a top secret type film called Apocalypto, dealing with the Mayan calendar. Are you aware of it? Are you involved with it?
Well, that's very fascinating. I wish I was involved in it. There was a trailer released not too long ago, and I've been very interested in what Mel is going to do with that. And I cannot. He's keeping it pretty tightly under wraps. If anybody
He
out
is.
there has any idea, please email me. I'd be curious to see what's going on. I think at this point, from the trailer, it seems as if the movie is limited to the adventures of a Mayan man or family within the context of a Mayan kingdom. I can't determine whether or not the conquest period is involved. It certainly doesn't seem that 2012 is involved, but only time will tell.
Are you going to go to this movie?
Oh, sure. I think that I've been very interested in how Hollywood and the media and the mass media and everything that's going on in the emergence of 2012 into sort of, consciousness, cultural consciousness. I'm curious as to how the idea gets reflected and refracted as it enters mass consumption, you might say.
I've been some of it. You might be shaking your head, John.
Well, there's
Others,
a
you
little
might
bit of
agree with
that,
them. Yeah,
yeah,
I
but
can understand. Bruce from Phoenix, Arizona, wants to know, how did human sacrifice in the Mayan cosmology intertwine? Did they do that, by the way? Human sacrifice?
yeah, there the Maya Mesoamerican culture did have different periods where they engaged in these kind of barbaric practices. Any high civilization, you'll find the whole spectrum of human genius and artistic achievement, as well as barbarism. I've really done a lot of work on this question because it is something that comes up a lot. And what I've been able to sort of separate out from the whole discussion is that as I look into spiritual traditions and I see how Mayan tradition connects with the great perennial philosophy, the great world traditions. Sacrifice in spiritual traditions around the world has a certain symbolic meaning. Now, this doesn't mean human sacrifice. That
Right.
would be a sort of a degraded, barbaric level of it. But in spiritual practice, it's important for a person to sacrifice or surrender, let's say, surrender their attachment to ego. And this is like in meditation practice, for example, breathing practice. It's all about meditating on letting go and disentangling oneself from the attachments to illusion. And this actually, it's an interesting how this segues with what I consider to be the big teaching or the prophecy that we find right in the Aesop and Balkort in the creation myth story is that It's all about how we can become freed from attachment to illusion and limitation.
Were they very, in your opinion, conscious of universal things? I guess what I'm trying to say is, I mean, did they all have this knowledge of maybe astral body projection, or was it just the shamans of the time?
Well, that's a good question. I'm really not sure. I would think that there would have, the Mayan society was kind of, you know, separated out into different classes of people. So I would imagine that it would have been the province of the shaman, basically. The shaman and the day keepers, the calendar priests, would have been more likely to have engaged in these kind of things. But then again, at the same time, you have clearly that Mayan kings were also doing these kind of things because they were a type of, you know, high shaman.
They probably didn't want their populace to know, because they wanted to keep being the rulers.
Well, that could be very well be, yeah.
If there are 6 million Mayans today, what happened to the gap of what could have been a civilization that was so advanced in a number of ways? Where did we lose track here? I mean, what happened?
Well, the big thing that happened was the conquest. You know, going back way before the conquest,
right.
Of course, there was the classic period Maya, and that definitely had a very end terminus to it around, I guess they say, around 900 A.D. But, you know, civilizations go through ebbs and flows. I mean, our own civilization had a dark age period. What if some invading force came in, you know, during the dark ages and just sort of interfered with the whole process that was going on? We never would have had the Renaissance or the Enlightenment period. So the conquest definitely probably interfered with the natural unfolding and evolution of Mesoamerican civilization.
Brandon from Los Angeles wants to know if anybody has talked to the current Mayans about the end of the Mayan calendar or that date. Any reaction from them?
Yes, they're very interested, and they have their own sort of perspective on it, which, like, for example, there's a Mayan shaman daykeeper in Guatemala, Don Alejandro, and I don't know where his perspective comes from, but he has an idea about 2012 that the Earth will pass through a dark cloud for 3 days. But the dark cloud has a magnetic axis in it. And so there's going to be like a chance that everything will be, you know, that the Earth won't come through, or there's a chance that that'll come through on the other side. So once again, and this is kind of a core teaching, I think, that I basically agree with, and a lot of sacred teachings are like this, it all always boils down to how human beings respond to the thing. It's kind of like prophecy.
Sure.
It's more like an evocation rather than something, a vision of something definitely out there in the future. Prophecy can be an evocation of the worst case scenario or our best case scenario for the future.
The calendar itself, there's no doubt that it was also created, of course, as you said, for seasons and maybe their crops and things like that. Why did they take it out so far, though, to 2012? And why does it end there? I mean, why doesn't it go on to 2050 and just keep going?
Well, basically, I believe what happened and what is responsible for 2012 being the end of a big cycle, about 2,100 years ago, at the site of Izapa, they were looking at the sky, and they had discovered that the sky slowly shifts, and this is the precession of the equinoxes. In fact, strangely, around the same time in Greece, the Greek astronomer Hipparchus was also making sky calculations, and he's credited with discovering precession in about 128 BC among the Greeks. And he did it with using star data that was only 140 years old. So precession is this vast cycle of the shifting of the sky. You know, it's basically because the Earth wobbles on its axis. So there's one complete wobble in 26,000 years. And at that time, the Azapans realized that this was happening. So the Maya were time obsessed. So they had to wrap their heads around what this was about. And what they did is they noticed that the sun was slowly shifting towards the Milky Way, the bright band of the Milky Way in the sky. And there's a diagram on the Coast to Coast website right now that illustrates that. And so they projected forward to when this great alignment in the sky was going to happen. And they thought of the alignment as Father Sun coming into union with Mother Galaxy, the Great Mother and the Great Father joining in the sky. And so they projected forward in their calculation, and their calculation is pretty much right on target, the galactic alignment in 2012.
The late Terrence McKenna was introduced your book, Maya Cosmogenesis. How did that all come about?
Well, Terrence and I were in correspondence in the early 90s. His book, written with his brother Dennis, called The Invisible Landscape, was really a landmark. It came out in 1975, and it was one of the earliest books, apart from Hamlet's Mill, that mentioned that there was going to be this rare, unusual alignment around the turn of the century. He called it around the year 2000. And then later he, in his whole theory of time, his novelty wave, which he really derived from his work with the I Ching, but strangely, the insights parallel what we're finding in Mayan cosmology. Later he fixed it to the 2012 end date. So I've always been interested in Terrence's work and in the way that he could clearly express very complex things. So correspondence with him in the early 90s led me to look deeper into this whole thing. And, you know, the key, of course, was that this galactic alignment does happen around the Mayan end date. And that's a connection of two things, but I couldn't just let it rest with that. What I did and what I really contributed to this whole discussion is showing how this galactic alignment scenario was encoded by the Maya into their core institutions, like the sacred ball game symbolizes the alignment, or the king crowning ceremony where he takes his throne in the center of heaven. That's like the solar god taking his throne. You know, that's a symbol of the alignment as well. So there's all these different ways that this 2012 alignment was encoded into Mayan institutions. And then, of course, when Maya Cosmogenesis was being written, I asked him if he'd like to write the introduction to it.
Would you be surprised if we didn't have any major Earth changes occurring on 2012 in that period?
No, I wouldn't be surprised at all. And that's not to say that I don't think something's going on that level. It's just that, you know, to have so much expectation around a particular date, I think distracts us from being in the here and now. Like if we're future projecting to December 21st, 2012, if 2012 is about, let's say it's about like transcending time, for
all
example,
right.
And getting a glimpse of that higher wisdom, like when we can transcend time, we catch a glimpse of the higher dimensional wisdom. So if we're future projecting all the time towards this future date, it's kind of like we're missing the point. So I wouldn't be surprised if nothing happens. But then again, see, the whole thing is that I believe it's a process-oriented thing. We can't pin it down to one particular day or even one particular year. We're in it now. So it's really about the work of, you know, connecting with our true selves.
It's already starting, isn't it, John?
Yeah.
Stay with us. We'll be back a final hour, and now we'll take your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM with our special guest, John Major Jenkins, and then we'll tell you about his website, alignment2012.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Might want to take a look at that. He's done a remarkable job with that as well. We'll be back.